Welcome to GCP Bite.
His voice is breaking all over again.
Welcome to GCP Bite.
It's a good show. Welcome to GCP Bites, episode number 17 for Friday, the 23rd of May, 2025. GCP Bites is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, has Broadcom gone completely nuts? We'll take a look at a few new GCP features. Update your Chrome. No, we're talking, it's serious this time. You better update your Chrome. Plus, we take a look at all the goodies that came from Google I.O. in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing good, mate, and my Chrome is updated, thank you. I checked. I'm looking around, all the little lights are fine.
Excellent. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
You got an updated Chrome?
I do have an updated Chrome. I did that yesterday.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll get on to that later in the show, what's going on there. But we keep saying it. Make sure you've got all your software and all your Chromes and everything updated. It's very important in today's age. How are you guys going?
Mate, I've just booked tickets to China for August.
China? Tell us what's happening in China in August.
So Google I.O. Connect is happening in Shanghai in August. And all the GDEs from Australia, as many as we can get over there, are all sort of congregating in Shanghai for a bit of a get-together. So,
jet set are you.
You're going to get the maglev train from the airport.
Yeah, I've never been to China before, so this is all very, very new. I've only ever been to Western countries.
Yeah, dude, it's gonna blow your mind. The scale of the place is just something else.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's what people have said. So
prepare to get really, really angry about the fact that we don't have a single fast train from Melbourne to Sydney. I was in China 6 years ago and I'm still not over it.
What's wrong with our ox tracks? They're fine.
What about just get angry that we don't have a single fast train?
At all.
Hey, we did. We've got some nice feasibility studies.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we do. And we've still got the Gan Railway there too, or at least most of it. Surely we could put a fast train on that.
I won't get into it now, but did either of you ever watch Utopia, the ABC series Utopia?
No.
And they had the NBA, the Nation Building Australia. It's Rob Sitchin, the Working Dog guys. Oh boy, if you can ever see that, then go and watch that. They're constantly talking about building fast trains and nation building. It's hilarious. So any tech adventures from you guys?
No, none from me. I've had a pretty full on week of taking over the treasurer responsibilities for the local sporting club I'm a member of. And so I have had my head stuck in MYOB for a week.
That's fun. Wow. It's accounting technology, right?
No. Accounting can be kept by accountants, to be perfectly honest.
Yes. There's a reason accountants are accountants and they can keep it.
Yep.
Although, has that been replaced by a language model yet? Don't think it'll be long.
No, MYOB's got its own AI.
Oh, of course it does.
Yeah. There actually is. There's some stuff in there for transaction matching, which has started to come through. I've noticed in mine recently, which is helpful. But, baby steps.
Yeah, between that and trying to get all our point-of-sale systems up to date and properly functional, as opposed to just guessing how much of what we sell over a bar every weekend. Because we've got a license for alcohol on the property. And previously it was just like there was an old till there that you just used to throw the cash into. Yeah. So no one had any idea what you'd sold.
Yeah, at some point you need to...
That system works perfectly fine.
Yeah, it does. It's really hard, though, to try and figure out when you end up with like we sell everything is either a whole dollar or a 50 cent increment. And so you get to the end of the day and there's like 20 cents extra in there and it's like,
like, how?
Where did this come from?
Well, it's interest earned on the taking. So.
Yeah, it magically appeared in the till.
Yeah.
So it's either someone hasn't counted the float correctly, or someone's tossed an extra 20 cent or given someone too much change, and now you've just got to try and figure out which one it is.
Try it in the kitty for the Christmas party.
Yep.
Yeah. I think on my side, I've just been, the dog's getting bigger, and so spending a lot of time training him up. He's doing absolutely champion effort. But, I mean, I was having a blast playing Expedition 33, which kind of, like, a mate of mine suggested it to me, and I was like, oh, I'll go check it out. It was on Game Pass, so, yeah, I know I could just pick it up and play, and oh, my God.
Expedition 33,
and it really blew me away. It sort of like kind of took me back to playing like Final Fantasy VII 20 years ago when that came out. Very, very similar. A lot of like plot twists and stuff. It's a bit of turn-based combat, but also you've got all these like quick time events, like parrying and stuff that you need to do. It's very fun, and the art style is amazing, and the music is gorgeous.
Yeah,
the graphics look really cool.
Yeah, Xbox, PlayStation, and it's on Steam. So I'm a PC gamer, so I'll definitely be checking that out.
Yeah, it's a really small studio, a French studio. It's done so well that Emmanuel Macron has like called it out as a triumph, basically.
A French triumph.
It's the first bit of positive cultural press that the French have had for a few years.
They're looking pretty good in the scheme of things at the moment, to be honest with you.
I'm just having a look through the about page on the overview of Expedition 33. One of the images they've got there is the Eiffel Tower being sort of looks like it's being blown away.
Yeah, it's the art style in it is something else. It's very hard to describe, but
yeah,
well worth picking up. Nice. What about you, Banky?
Yeah, well, my little tech adventure is that I sat the Professional Cloud Network Engineer exam last Friday, and I passed.
Yay.
So,
well done.
This is the third time you've done this.
Third time I've sat this. It was a recertification, but boy, oh boy, that is honestly the toughest one. I think it's the toughest exam I've ever sat. Like they throw, because what we've got now is early on when I first did it, we'll go back to the first time we did it. It was a lot of Kubernetes stuff in there. Really, when it came down to networking Google Cloud, it was all about Kubernetes and integrating Kubernetes into Google Cloud. But since then, of course, we've got Autopilot and a lot of new networking technologies have come along, like Network Connection Center. And hierarchical firewalls and things like that, right? So the first time I did a lot of Kubernetes, that was difficult because you're subnetting, you're working, they throw in curveball questions with overlapping IP addresses and things like that. You're constantly doing that in your head. And I complained about having huge blocks of texts, and then each of the responses were huge blocks of text as well. Okay, and you had to like hold it all in your head while you read through it all. It was really taxing. The second time through, they cut a lot of that down. There were actual network diagrams, and the responses were a lot more succinct, and I felt it was a lot simpler the second time through. I didn't feel like I'd been hammered. This third time through, oh boy, it was like they turned it up to 11. There was a lot of questions about integrating on-prem via hybrid connectivity. A lot of questions around, hierarchical firewalls, and NCC and linking building networks that way with NCC. Lots of questions you were required to subnet mask in your head and calculate the number of addresses. They threw in like overlapping addresses and asked if this was going to be a problem or not, and it was quite difficult. Needless to say, it was quite difficult. And I was going through, and I thought I tanked it. Like I totally thought I tanked it. And granted, my preparation wasn't the best because I'd been away and come back, and I really only had like a week and a half to like hit the books. But no, I got to the end. Now normally, it's 50 questions over 2 hours. Normally I finish and I might have half an hour. One time I had 45 minutes. It was a luxury. And I'd go through and I review the questions I'd flagged, and then I'll go through and review them all. And that's my usual pattern. But this time I had like 10 minutes left, like not even 10 minutes. And so I reviewed the questions I'd flagged, and I went, I'm done. I was mentally taxed. I was just over it. I had maybe 2 minutes left, so I just went submit. And yeah, you get that little pass up in the top left corner.
The little red text that the says pass.
Font possible. And I thought, thank God. So, I just sat with my head in my hands for about 5 minutes just going, that was just ridiculous.
Well, that's it. I'm going to go get a beer. And
yeah, I actually rang Ian. Oh, I rang my wife first and said, I'll pass. She's like, yeah, yeah. All right, great, great. I've got a meeting. And then I had to ring Ian. I rang Ian and said, mate, that was the most difficult thing. I actually sat there and, mate, I'm going to have to drink a case of beer.
Do you think, like, given that there's so many more, as you said, it wasn't just about Coops, right? And if we go back on how Google Cloud has matured over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, how it appeals a lot more to larger businesses and brownfield estates that are migrating in, whereas, yeah, you know, yeah, 5 years back, it was very much, oh, this is a developer cloud. You know, it's yeah, great. Yeah, you can go, everything can be, you know, cubes all the way through. But now it's like, no. We need patterns where we can tie on-prem and we want to insert, yep, you know,
mate,
Palo
you hit
Altos
the nail.
And,
you absolutely hit the nail on the head. When we were all working on the Uni Super project, which I think is common knowledge now, we were talking about, you know, inserting intrusion detection appliances and linking VPCs together and all that kind of design patterns. That wasn't even thought about in Google Cloud. Like, no one was talking about that, right? We were at the vanguard of that kind of idea.
You had to dig out, like, things like, if you stick these two together, this will probably work.
This will probably work, yeah. Now, that's the norm. There were straight-up questions about that kind of design pattern, putting an intrusion detection appliance and enabling IP forwarding and setting up multiple VLANs and doing that kind of thing. And definitely, like, the big angle was all around hybrid connectivity and on-prem integration. Absolutely. No, you're right.
Yeah, the whole idea of having to on the fly decode a netmask or convert it to IPs is just, I'll pass.
Yeah, well, and I don't see the value in that, because how often do you need to do it? As in, like, in real terms, in your day-to-day as a network engineer or a cloud network engineer, like, how much of that do you actually do? You probably have a table sitting there, like, oh, wait, which slash do I need? Oh, this is fine. Okay, great.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it was very obvious. Like, when you actually looked at the answers, it became very obvious, because they wanted, like, 30,000 addresses, and one of them was one of the answers had a /24, and the other one had like a /16 or something, and you go, well, it's got to be the bigger one, right? Like, it can't be. So you ended
30,000 /32s.
Yeah. So if you're going to sit that exam, gird your loins, because it's a tough one. It is really a tough one. Thank God I don't have to do it for another 2 years.
But if you're someone who is, I suppose, you know, a born in the cloud native kind of person that's probably never really touched tin, you might find it very hard to map some of those constructs.
Oh yeah, I never even thought about that, but absolutely, yeah. I don't even know where you'd begin if you were that kind of individual.
But
really,
that comes with the territory, though. You've got guys that are in the, and girls too, that are in cloud these days that have never constructed a network proper in their life. Like, they've never logged into a switch before or a router and had to add routes in for something.
No, it's all just cloud router and shared VPCs.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So
that's networking, isn't it? Well, you know.
Not really.
Not really, no.
You put a route into a router and it bombs the entire router, and then you figure out, that's not going to work.
or you do the, well, I can't say. Maybe I did this once. you change your connection between a router to a trunk and then chop yourself off from the remote router.
Yeah, I think we've all done that.
Oops, forgot to set the native VLAN.
Oops. And then I have to get in the car and go for a 20-minute drive. But
yeah, for me, it was a two-hour drive.
you're on the road and then your phone rings and it's your boss and you're like, yeah, I know, I'm on the way.
Exactly.
Well ahead of you.
I'm proactive here. I'm very proactive. Yep. So, look, with that out of the way, I now have the security professional certification, which should be a lot smoother and a little bit easier. Because, you know, you just look for the principle of least privilege in most of the questions and you're done.
Yep.
and then I've got the DevOps and the developer certs as well towards the back part of the year. So I've got them all lined up.
Right. Well, the developer one's not too bad. I mean, unless it's cranked up in difficulty, the DevOps one is reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, you just got to know your SLAs and your SLOs for the DevOps one, really.
Yep.
Sure. But if you're, if you're looking for a little bit of a palate cleanser, mate, you can go off and go get your generative AI digital leader cert.
You can get your generative AI digital leader cert, mate. What a segue. You've learned from the master.
Thanks, mate.
become a certified generative AI leader with a first of its kind credential from Google Cloud. How good's this?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is adding on as another entry-level cert. Like, you had the Cloud Digital Leader one, which very much targeted at, you know, your kind of management-level folks. Yeah. Convincing them, showing you, like, look, even you can stand up a compute engine instance and, you know, you can migrate your entire enterprise across.
And the sales types that, you know, they just need an understanding of what happens in a cloud.
Yeah, a little bit of language to, you know, when they go to sell it. Yeah, for sure.
But I love the quote. So the keyword article has a quote in there. Our research shows that more than 80% of people with a Google Cloud certification say the credential opens doors to a new career opportunities and accelerates their path to promotions. I'm like, interesting. Never used it like that.
I've read that sort of rhetoric before. I think it's a standard line.
But I think this looks like an interesting one. I'm actually thinking about doing it myself because, again, I'm not expecting that it would be an intense study, requirement to go and do it. Having a look at the breakdown on the curriculum, you've got fundamentals of generative AI, which is demonstrating a solid core grasp of core concepts, going through Google's Gen AI offerings, some techniques on how to improve Gen AI model output, and business strategies for a successful Gen AI solution. So, it's all pretty kind of standard stuff. How to use the tools, which ones Google has, how to get the most out of it, and then, how to develop your own solutions in a business and, make them worthwhile.
And then how to work around their guardrails.
And you can bet that this is some sort of lead into some sort of AI professional certification as well.
Yeah, I probably end up with a Vertex AI one somewhere,
Yep.
Yep.
But, so the training for the Gen AI course is free. The exam is $99. But, you can jump on to, where is it at? It's on, Cloud Skills Boost, and you can do the Gen AI Leader Learning Path. It's about 8 hours worth of content.
I think I've done some of those courses already, just as a matter of fact. They kind of mix all the stuff in together when you're doing different pathways on Cloud Skills Boost there. And while we're bantering here, we've got a critical 10 out of 10 Microsoft Cloud security vulnerability, which has been confirmed. What are the details on this?
So this one was one that I sort of had a read of during the week, and there's four separate CVEs that are critical rating of 9 or above. So the least critical one is Microsoft Power Apps Information Disclosure Vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Then it goes up to a 9.9 Azure Automation Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability, and then another 9.9 of Azure Storage Resource Provider Spoofing Vulnerability, and then a rating of 10 for Azure DevOps Escalation. Sorry, try that again. Azure DevOps Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability. So all four of these are really, really nasty by themselves, but are also even worse when they're put together.
Right.
I suppose the good part about this is Microsoft's already patched it. And there's no real evidence of them being exploited in the wild. So that's a good thing. But yeah, four in one hit is pretty nasty.
Pretty nasty. Pretty nasty. All right. So patch your stuff. That's always the mantra around here. All right. Should we do it?
Let's do it.
Let's get on with the community news. And Ian, you threw those in here, and since you're the jet setter that you are, tell us all about what's coming up.
look, only two that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. GDG Sydney is having their June meetup. That is happening on June the 4th. Mantle Group head office in Sydney, in George Street, from 5:30 onwards. The link will be in the show notes, RSVP for that one. And GDG Melbourne is running a Build with AI workshop on the 28th of May from 6 p.m. Again, it's at the Mantle office, obviously in Melbourne this time. Don't go to Sydney for that one. but yeah, those are the only two that I found. Links will be in the show notes. So,
yep, go and get your vibe code on.
Yeah, Banky loves his vibe coding now.
A bit of vibe coding. All right. Well, good. Get along to those. Say hi and, have fun. All right, then. Let's get on with the news items. And, Broadcom at it again. It's every fortnight there's something going on with Broadcom.
We do it every week. Every time we do this podcast, we're like, they can't get any worse than this. And every fortnight
what can we do?
We see your challenge and we meet it.
VMware perpetual license holders receive cease and desist letters from Broadcom. What the actual?
Yeah. And it sounds like what is happening is that Broadcom's legal team is setting out preemptive cease and desists. So as soon as, if you have a perpetual license, but you let your support contracts lapse, or they don't let you create a support contract because they want you to get on a, VCF subscription.
Yep.
They're sending out a cease and desist letter saying that if you have updated your systems since your environment lapsed, your contract lapsed, you need to uninstall those patches.
Yep.
Right? The only patches that you are allowed to apply are 0 days. So no feature updates, nothing, no general bug fixes.
Nope.
Uninstall.
They're sending it to customers that are unable to renew their support contracts because VMware won't let them. Broadcom of like, nope, you must move to a subscription. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and they're sending it to customers that have moved off VMware.
Yeah. That bit I found quite amusing. But there was one customer said that they received a letter 6 days after their support contract expired.
Yeah, so they must just have a step in their CRM. Sales team was unable to sell them on this subscription. Contract has expired. Punch to legal.
Send letter.
Yeah. So one of the lines in this article that stood out for me because Broadcom is sort of digging their own grave here. Their changes to how VMware is distributed have resulted in various firms ditching Broadcom and doubting Broadcom's care for customers. So there's lots of, and this is all from an MSP over in Canada. They're moving their customers off VMware and onto other solutions. Broadcom have done a whole heap of really silly things. Like they got in a battle with AT&T. That's actually linked in this article somewhere.
It is, yeah. Legal battle with AT&T Telecom over there, right. And yeah. Siemens as
and
well.
They accuse Siemens of pirating the software. Like a company of that size would be so stupid as to pirate software.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're tangling with some pretty big organisations here. They want to make sure that they know they've got all their ducks in a row. I like this quote. This is from Colpitz, who was interviewed in this article. He said, the one thing that kind of pissed me off is the fact that Broadcom retains the right to still perform audits whenever they choose, but that's utter BS anyway.
Yep.
if a customer wanted to hide stuff, it could easily be done. I've never done that. But since it's all self-reporting and clear text with no security checksums or anything to detect tampering, it would be easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, suppose Microsoft
there's audits
and clauses.
Audits, right? There's like where some guys turn up and sit down in your office. That's
in their lab suits.
So previous job that I was working at, we had Microsoft audit us because we got rid of Exchange Server and went to Google Workspace or Google App for the Business back then. And Microsoft audited us straight away because, you know, you've now removed like $50,000 a year out of your environment.
Oh, why? Yeah, right.
They literally sent this tool in as like, you need to run this tool across your environment and send us the report. It's like, why? And it's in their contract. If you use a Microsoft service, even as a home user, they're allowed to audit you.
Just another argument use case for Linux, eh?
Yep. I was going to say on that, there's another article that we'll cover a little bit later where...
And later is now!
Later is now. It is the future. As VMware costs rise, Micron 21 taps into its T4 capabilities to tempt defectors.
Yeah, so Micron 21 has built a full Tier 4 solution on OpenStack. So they're using Ceph for the back end, and because they have a whole heap of data centers that are all connected via fiber links with super low latency, they can actually offer that tier four level replication from site to site using Ceph.
Distributed, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you remember the old terminology, you had SANs and you could have like a metro cluster, like stretched clusters, and you go like, sort of 25 Ks away, gets you outside of a blast radius of a reasonable sized weapon. So this is what they've managed to build. So I think Ceph, is quite sensitive on the latency side of things. So given that the fact that they've had their own dark fiber between these locales, they're able to light it up and, less hops, less latency, and
And look, OpenStack is I ran it many years ago, and it was hard yakka to run, but if you're at that scale, you should have a whole heap of automation, and I'm sure the product has come so far since I used it more than 10 years ago. If they've got the tier 4 grade replication that they can put in place, and they're running it all on good tin, then it seems like it might actually be a viable alternative.
And they said they're able to hit quite an aggressive price point on this, just because they're not like, yes, they've got all the overhead of running OpenStack, but because they're not having to pay like VMware's like cloud pricing, like for all the hosting side of things, like they're able to offer it that is at a more aggressive price point.
Yeah. And I need to have another look at OpenStack because it was revolutionary 10 years ago.
It was, yeah. And Ceph is open source, right? Yeah. So, the possibility exists of contributing back to that and, improving it where you need it and where your clients need improvements.
Well, if you've got Proxmox, it uses Ceph for its hyperconverged storage.
Yeah, I think Harvester uses Ceph as well.
Yeah.
So it is definitely in the open source or new breeds of hypervisors that are getting significant investment in our post-Broadcom world, would seem to be coalescing around a few of these technologies like Ceph. And why not, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to recode vSAN replication from scratch.
No, we've got it all there already, yeah. Another win for open source, just as well we had it, right?
That's it.
Indeed.
I'm just having a look at their run-of-the-mill, like, mCloud performance instance. So two CPUs, 16 gig of RAM, 200 gig of NVMe Ceph storage. And you're looking at $185 a month ex-GST, which is, that's very, very comparable to running an instance in GCP.
You can try mCloud for free for 30 days as well. They have quite a reasonable trial period there. All right, moving on. Google Cloud expands cyber insurance program in Australia. You see what I've done here? I've created a little AI summary.
This. I did wonder where these came through in our run sheet.
Yeah. So Google Cloud has expanded its risk protection program, adding Beazley and Chubb. You've probably heard about Chubb before, as global insurance partners, alongside the partner Munich Re. This is for managing cyber risks and cyber insurance, and there's new Australian regulations, APRA's CPS 230 and CPS 234. The RPP Cyber Insurance Hub allows customers to generate real-time security posture reports, enabling cyber telematics. I just wanted to throw this in because it is a reflection. I mean, we're constantly reporting breaches, right, cyber breaches, but this is Google Cloud focusing on the Australian market and adding some already existing insurance groups into now be available to get your cyber insurance from because, you really got to have this.
Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting proposal because, yes, you need to have your cyber insurance. You need to cover yourself for, you know, what happens if you – get crypto locked or your customer data leaks and you need to deal with a news report about your company.
Yeah.
And this is a way then for the insurance companies to be able to correctly underwrite you without just, it being a sheet of like, do you have an appropriate security policy? Yes.
Yep.
Do you patch all your servers? Yes.
Yes.
Do you have open buckets with everybody's passports copies in them? No. Oh, wait. Actually,
probably.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you patch your servers? Yes. Once a year. But we don't reboot them.
So, this does actually give that like a portal access to be able to, pull reports and give genuine data.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it puts some liability back on, the organizations. If you want your cyber insurance, here's all your check boxes you got to complete, or you're not covered, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
Insurance. It's about as exciting as it sounds.
Yeah.
Almost as exciting as accounting.
Almost as exciting as accounting. All right, then. So moving on. Google cut bonuses to underperforming staff. Google's revamping its employee compensation structure, making significant changes to how bonuses and equity are awarded based on performance reviews. What's going on here?
Well, it looks like they've got they do a yearly system called GRAD, so Google Reviews and Development, and it classifies employees into five different tiers. So goes from not enough impact, moderate impact, significant impact, outstanding impact, and transformative impact. And that corresponds to the level of bonus the employee gets. So what they're saying in the article is that Google's Vice President of Global Compensation and Benefits says managers can now award outstanding impact to more employees. They'll be given a higher discretionary budget to reward those with significant impact. And according to BI, most employees fall within the significant impact category. However, to balance that, because they want to leave it as a cost neutral, those with a moderate impact or lower are getting less.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty standard stack ranking stuff, right? There will be a percentage of, yes, we expect 60% of our staff will fall into the significant bucket and you know, 20% will fall into this next one above, and 2% will be in the top tier one, and we expect 3% to be in the bottom tier, and those people are going to be on the way out of the company, right? It's very standard. Doesn't matter if you've got an awesome team, there will be a pressure, I'm sure, on managers to be like, you need to fit your team to this.
Yeah.
Great way to create a toxic environment,
yep,
in my 100%. Opinion. Perfect way to do it.
So on that, Mark Zuckerberg said he would fire and replace 5% of Meta's low performers in a memo first reported in January by Bloomberg. So, I mean, if you've got the CEO of the company going, I'm gonna fire 5% of the employees on a company that employs God knows how many people, that's a lot of people.
Mm.
And if you think that you're even remotely close to a low performer, then you have this doubt that's seeding in your head.
Yeah, so there is an incentive in these sorts of models. I mean, this is all ex-Jack Welch GE stack ranking. This is where this came from. Mm-hmm. And it is basically to keep that churn of your a bunch of your staff on the way out. So, yeah, have fun with that, Googlers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the last sentence in this article I find quite horrific, actually. Recently urged employees working on Gemini AI tools to be in the office at least every weekday, okay, which is fair, and said if you've got a, you know, work in the office culture, and said they should be clocking 60-hour weeks.
Yeah.
That is horrific.
Yeah. But that, I mean, that's a fairly typical week in American culture, though. They work like dogs. We don't.
Aren't we in the work smarter, not harder, environment at the moment?
It wasn't that long ago that one of the founders of LinkedIn came out and said that, you know, we want you to have a good work-life balance where you go home, you have dinner with your family, and then you clock back in. I'm like, nah, champ, once I've left the office, I'm out.
That's it, done.
I've got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, when you're an enterprise the size of Google, like, you are not a scrappy little startup where you've got like 5 engineers and they all have a significant stake in the company.
Yeah.
And yeah, sure, maybe they're going to work for free in some of that time because they've got that equity burn. But like, I know you're getting points in Google, but.
Yep.
Yeah. 60 hours a week is not appealing to me.
Yeah, no thanks.
40 seems too much as far as I'm concerned.
All right, well, we'll leave that to them, and I'll just continue working for Australia, New Zealand's best Google partner. I don't know if I'd mention that, but yeah, we've once again secured. I probably did mention that.
We covered it when you were swanning off on a cruise.
When I was swanning off on a cruise, but I should also mention that we just went through the specialization certification process. And we've once again earned the infrastructure specialization from Google. And we are the most specialized Google partner in Australia and New Zealand. So got that going for us.
The specialist of special.
The specialist of special, yeah.
The most special.
Anyway, that's a tangent.
speaking of special things.
Speaking of special things, JK, a good mate of ours, has written a blog up. What's he talking about here? Yeah. Cloud Run and Anywhere Proxy.
Yeah, so JK put a blog out, it was a few days ago now, about using Google Cloud Run with IAP, so Identity Aware Proxy, in order to secure your Cloud Run apps.
I said, what's so special about that? And then I had to think about it when I was talking to you around. I think, well, of course, because the Cloud Run endpoint URL is just exposed. It's just hanging out there in the world.
But
no longer you can put it behind IAP.
Yeah,
now.
So you can put it behind IAP. And JK steps through the whole process on doing this and how to configure it and all the rest of it. But he does call out some really good key benefits and some really good features in this article. So obviously the really obvious key benefits here is it's a zero trust security. It's simplified access control with IAM because Identity Aware Proxy is using IAM for your authorization. It allows you to protect internal and sensitive applications. So you don't have to set the application to internal only and have connections into Google Cloud, like private connections in. You can set it as public, but then make it private by putting it behind IAP.
Which you can do for free.
That's exactly right. So IAP doesn't cost you anything extra. It gives you detailed audit trails, and that's a really big one. We were talking before about security of your environment and cyber risk and all that sort of stuff. Detailed audit trails are fantastic. So getting started with this is super simple. It is literally a checkbox in the stand-up of your Cloud Run instance, or if you edit your Cloud Run instance, you can check the little box that says Advanced Authentication with IAP. And then you'll need to configure your OAuth consent screen, which I assume that 99.99% of people already have. If you haven't, go and do it. And then assign the IAP secured web app user role to your users, and you have it secured.
Presto, it works.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how this works, and he does go into it as a paragraph here. This is where the new integration shines. Even if your Cloud Run service has a public URL that anyone could theoretically hit, IAP steps in before the request reaches your service.
That's right.
It forces an authentication challenge if the user is signed in with Google account that has the necessary permissions, i.e. is part of the authorized group, they are allowed through. Otherwise, access is denied. So, yeah, it just literally inserts itself between the URL and your service.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the really good things here is that you can use this for like a dev or a QA environment that's running on Cloud Run. You can put a IAP in front of that and say, only my engineers are allowed to get to it. But the really cool part about this is you can also grant external users access. So you can go into the IAP configuration and you can grant a principal, so an email address, service account, whatever, a certain access level, and they will also be allowed through. So it's not just hey, this is restricted to my org. It can be anybody that uses the Google account to go through.
Right, so you could have a SaaS, absolutely.
Yeah,
and you could still do this in the back end, which is nice.
Yeah. So that was a really, really cool addition to Cloud Run. And I thought it was where JK wrote probably the best article that I've seen out in the wild about it. So I thought we might shout it out on the podcast because it's always good seeing complex things like this distilled down to something so simple.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's a good one. Go check it out. And while you're there, why don't you subscribe to his Substack as well and get the notifications directly to your inbox. All right, cool. Google and a bunch of other hyperscalers are thinking about this power problem, and Google in particular has made a 600 megawatt solar power deal to supply its data centers, which is good news. Is it enough? Is it going to be enough? Well, as we've seen, they're spinning up nuclear power stations to power their IDCs. I mean, are we going to be able to get enough power from the sun? Remains to be seen. The new deal covers solar and storage projects being developed in South Carolina. And the company says it has 16 gigawatts under development. Most projects listed on their site have deployed around 60 megawatts to 75 megawatts of solar. Google has recently invested heavily in renewables. Last year, it pledged to invest $20 billion with Intersect Power and TPG Rise Climate to build enough zero-carbon power plants to provide electricity to several gigawatts. In January, they had another contract for 700 megawatts. So, yeah, look, I guess they've got a vested interest in this, right? Like, I mean, power ain't getting cheaper, and governments certainly don't seem to be generating enough of it. And, they need to somehow power their future, their AI futures.
Yeah. This article goes on to say Google isn't alone here because, I mean, we've already covered That's Microsoft's right. one. But Microsoft has hundreds of megawatts of solar this year alone, 475 megawatt purchase in March. Meta's also signed deals of 595 megawatts and a 505 megawatt solar in January and February as well.
Yeah, well, you know what's impressive about this? I mean, these are decent numbers, right? Mm. And they're talking, this has been generated from solar.
Yeah.
right? Like, I mean, come on. Like, it's for you know, last 20, 30 years, it's just been bagged. It's never going to be enough. It's gonna, never going to be enough. But here we are, 2025, we're powering IDCs from solar.
Yeah, solar, right? And battery backing. And
solar and battery backs, yep. Yep. We've crossed the threshold somewhere along there, right? Well, we're actually doing it now.
And if you've got the sunlight to do it, then do it.
Why the hell not?
We've got one of the biggest countries with the most sunlight in the world. And not that any other country gets less sunlight, but like the vast majority of Australia.
Have you been to England? Yeah.
But the vast majority of Australia is uninhabitable, yeah, as in, yeah, like it's just desert. Yeah. And so putting massive solar arrays there is perfectly sensible.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the premise behind the massive sun cable project, which is aimed to basically take a bunch, because obviously we've got the land and we've got the sun, to take a bunch of Australian solar power and shipping it to Singapore, which is... does not have land. Yeah. You've been to Singapore.
Yeah.
All that land is very valuable.
I'll be there in August.
Well, there you go.
For about 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Have a look at the window from the beautiful Singapore airport and you'll see there.
Changi Airport is insane. Make sure you go up the top and make sure you go to the big fountain thing in Changi Airport. Right. It is just crazy. The future is now. It's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's the goal, right? Is that they don't have that, you know, ability to have this massive scale out solar solution, but we do. And so that's the plan.
Just walk me through this. Yeah. How do you get the power from Central Australia to Singapore?
Copper cable.
Right.
Yeah, so this is Mike Cannon-Brookes project. So like we do undersea fiber, this is a power cable, basically.
Wowzers.
Okay,
giant extension cord.
That's going to be
one voltage loss.
Hella thick. Yeah. Yeah, and how do you cope with voltage drop and so many issues transmitting power over that long distance?
Yeah.
I assume they've thought about all these things. But
it's the Australia-Asia Power Link.
They'll have engineers much smarter than us on this, mate.
Yeah. There you go. Going from Darwin to Singapore over, it looks like, two legs. Yeah, 800K. Yes.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, just huge. Looking at like 20 gigawatts worth of solar generation.
Yeah. I can see. And they're saying they're going to supply electricity to Darwin by 2030 and then to Singapore a few years later. Okay. We'll see.
But, I mean, these large-scale ones are really quite interesting. I've become quite interested in the whole agrivoltaics stuff, which is where you can still have like... grazing land, but you don't have to give it up for the solar. You basically, they're just the panels are on elevated stands and you can still graze underneath them. And from what they've been seeing is the grass grows better with that little bit of shade. And like for the sheep, they've been like a better quality of wool for the ones that have been grazing under the solar panels.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
Win-win.
Yeah. So it's nice having cake, eating it too.
Yeah.
And if you're a farmer, right, you can have like, all right, I've got my seasonal profit that comes from, you know, my grazing animals, but then I can have a daily, you know, profit coming in off my solar and battery generation.
Yeah, yeah. And you turn the profit up during the summer on that, obviously, mm-hmm. and then during the wetter winter months, you might be,
This is really an interesting project because they're trying to transmit... So I'm just reading the project summary on their website here, and it says, the project proposes to develop the world's largest renewable energy generation and battery storage precinct in the heart of the Northern Territory and a 5,000-kilometre high-voltage direct current system to deliver 6 gigawatts of 24/7 electricity to industrial customers in Darwin and Singapore. That's some big cables to be delivering high-voltage DC.
DC. 5,000 Ks. DC has even more problems with voltage drop over a long distance. Yeah. So what? Huh?
Because otherwise they would have to convert it to AC because it comes off a solar panel, which is DC. They'd have to convert it to AC and step it, and that's a voltage drop right there. and then transmit it. And yes, you might be able to transmit it longer distance with less voltage drop, but I think the losses incurred at the conversion would be more than the losses incurred over the cable.
Yeah, well, I used to be able to do the calculations for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I can't.
I've got a book over there that tells me how to do it, but no, not these days.
Yeah.
Yes, there would be some losses in that system, in that voltage transformer, but yeah, you just need to work it out. I'm sure they've got guys that can do that.
Oh, I'm sure they do too. It's not us.
It definitely ain't me.
I struggle with the counting. All right.
So if you're powering all that AI, you're going to need some good infrastructure to put it on. And we have some new tools that have been launched by GCP. And one of them that I really liked is called Rapid Storage. Rapid Storage is a new cloud storage zonal bucket that provides less than 1 millisecond random read and write latency and 20 times faster data access, up to 6 terabytes per second of throughput, and 5 times lower latency for random reads and writes. And, of course, this is all what you need if you're training your model.
And this, got to keep your CPU loaded with data.
That's it.
And this just goes to show how good Google's Colossus file system is, because this is all built on top of Google Colossus. So you got to think about how quick that file system is to be able to offer this to the general public on top of what Google is already using it for.
Would they have sort of separate racks for this to say these are our rapid storage racks, and they wouldn't be intermixing all the storage types?
It's still like in the zone. I guess it's not like in the particular data aisle that you're trying to get the two together, but at least as long as it's in the same zone, you're close enough.
My understanding of Colossus is that the custom boards that Google puts in their racks have hard disks on them. And those hard disks participate in Colossus.
Right.
So it's thousands and thousands and thousands of disks that make up Colossus, and all of those reads and writes across thousands of disks means very small numbers for each disk. But it just goes to show how big and how phenomenal this file system actually is.
Yeah, and along with that, we get a couple other goodies as well. We get Anywhere Cache, which is a strongly consistent cache that works with existing regional buckets to cache data within a selected zone and can reduce latencies by up to 70%.
Right, so that'd be more like I still want to have my regional bucket. Right, I don't want to go down to just one that's in the same, just in a single zone. I still want regional, but I want my accelerators that are in different zones to get the best performance that they can. Mm.
And Google Cloud Managed Lustre, a new high-performance, fully managed parallel file system, which sounds nice. The zonal storage provides a petabyte scale under 1 millisecond latency.
Wow.
Wow.
Yep. Millions of IOPS and terabytes per second of throughput. That is huge. Imagine how many SSDs are in that.
Oh, it's huge. And new storage intelligence tool. It can provide insights on their environment by querying object metadata using the power of LLMs. The power of LLMs. Nice.
The power of LLMs in the palm of my hand. Dr. Octavius.
Yeah. I could have ruled the world. nice. So go and check that out for your high-performance computing needs. Moving on to some Android security news.
We don't cover much Android stuff on here, do we?
No, we're getting a new security feature for Android. Now, I haven't actually even gone and had a look, see if I got this. And advanced protection. The Android operating system currently installed on billions of devices across the globe is receiving some significant security updates. This is May 14. I noticed the other day I had to do a little reboot.
Yeah.
And
I did the other day as well. But this one's really cool. So there's a few mixed reactions to this in the wild. There's a lot of people going, oh, Google's taking away our freedom on Android. They're not really. They're just making sure that you're not the next victim of a a cybersecurity attack or cryptocurrency fraud or whatnot. So there's four main things that they've released as part of this new security measure in Android 16, warning about possible risk from unknown caller actions. So obviously unknown callers can be malicious. So Google's trying to make sure that you're aware of what's going on there. Enhanced fraud and scam protection. So they're trying to target things like cryptocurrency fraud, gift card fraud, toll road fraud, tech support impersonation.
Those toll road ones are the ones that they get me a bunch. Not as they like don't get me, but I get them sent to me. Like, you have an overdue toll invoice. Yeah.
I ignore all of them. Yeah. Even when they come and they look like they come from Linked, I still ignore them.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I have a Linked account, and if you haven't charged my Linked account, then I'm sorry.
That's right. That's your problem.
Yeah.
The next one is anti-theft and app protection upgrades. So Google released back in 2024 sometime the device theft protection. So if it suddenly detects the device speeding away at a fantastic rate of knots from where you are, it automatically locks it. And then the last one is the locate lost friends, family, and property with the Find Hub. So you get a new Find Hub, which will simplify tracking lost friends. I don't know how you track lost friends, but sure. Family members and personal property.
Now, when I was reading this, I had a bit of a Big Brother moment.
Yep.
And it might be a good thing or not. What if you could have the model listening to your phone call, really dystopian, and then if it detects that it's a scam caller, because they can still call you and scam you, right? Mm. And if the model detects it's a scam caller, it actually interjects on the call or terminates the call for you.
Yeah, I'm not a, yeah. I wouldn't be signing up for that one.
No.
But you can bet it's coming along, though.
Oh yes, and so
it's coming.
So, and that was one of the things that I read was that this is becoming a lot like Apple's ecosystem, where Big Brother is always listening, or yep. always dictating what you can and can't do. And look, yes, that is to an extent what is happening, but also not really. It's more just sort of locking down the ecosystem a little bit to try and prevent a lot of the more obvious things from happening.
Yeah. Something like that, I wouldn't sign up to it. We wouldn't sign up to it. But vulnerable individuals that really have no idea, you just turn that feature on and you know that something is looking out for them. Yeah. I don't know.
Speaking of vulnerable individuals.
Google Chrome. Lots of vulnerable individuals there.
While we're on the security tip, Google Chrome deadline, 21 days to update or stop using the browser. An edict has been issued by the US government agencies. Google has warned that Chrome is open to attack and has rushed out to fix a vulnerability that enables a hacker to steal login credentials and bypass multi-factor authentication. It's a critical issue and it's imperative it's fixed immediately. The US government has now mandated all federal staff to update by June 5, whether you're a home or enterprise user, you should do the same.
Correct.
You just need to restart your browser, people. Don't you have to wait till June 5?
and then for all those who've got like, oh, I can't restart my browser because I've got a bazillion tabs open, learn how Control-Shift-T works.
Yeah.
It's a magic key combo.
Anyway.
There's a setting for that to remember the tabs you had open. Go and turn that on.
But if you don't have that turned on, the simplest solution here is Control-Shift-T when the new browser window opens, and it will open up all the tabs that you had open in that window. And if you had multiple windows like I do, I have got three different Chrome windows open, you can Control-Shift-T and it will, in that same profile, open up all three sets of tabs.
Basically, look... I read a lot of self-help books. I'm reading one at the moment called Grit. And open, and one of the things that was highlighted to me, I read a book recently called Dose by TJ Thomas. He's talking about dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. What the heck has this got to do with tabs on Chrome? Well, the thing about tabs is, he was saying, a tab is an incompleted idea. If you've got a tab open, it's something you've only half done, right? So close the tabs. There's no, it's just mental garbage you don't need to have hanging around. Why have you got all these tabs open? Because you wanted to do something and then you moved on to something else. Everyone's got really short attention spans at the moment. The more tabs you have open, you're just context shifting from one thing to the other.
I use it.
Do something with a tab. Use it. Yeah. Bookmark it. I don't know. Whatever you want to do, but move on. Try not to have too many tabs open. That's one of my other things at the moment.
I just use it more as a list of bookmarks, essentially.
But you can group them.
I can.
You can pin them.
I can.
You can do other things, right? You don't need to have 50 million tabs open.
I don't know that any computer's got enough RAM for that.
All right. Well, enough of that. Let's get on with the AI Wars. AI Wars. And I thought, look, I mean, Google I/O has come out, and look, it may as well be called Google AI.
AI,
Honestly, everything is AI. This is a quick fire list of the top 13 biggest announcements from Google I/O, and we've got they're basically all AI enhancements. Number one, Google Search got its biggest AI upgrade yet. So we've got a new AI mode in Google Search that's being rolled out, which includes a deep search mode.
Yep.
It's being rolled out. If you're doing a search and you've got that, I don't know how it's going to work. You'll get access to one of the small. I'm assuming it'll be the smaller models. Unfortunately, it does coincide with the less popular overviews is also getting a wider rollout in search. So yeah, look out for that. Number two, Google just made shopping more fun. Look, this is. I don't want to be the harbinger of doom, but this is really feeding into the phenomena of the no-click internet, and it's all about this really. They don't want you clicking anywhere. You've got to stay in Google. Once you have a product, and one of the things you can do with this is once you have a product or outfit in mind, Google agentic checkout feature will basically buy the product for you using the payment and delivery details stored in Google Pay.
Yeah, that one's not for me.
I don't see that one being a go. I think that's going to be about as popular as the idea of getting your Google Homes to order pizza for you and things like that. Yeah. Like it's,
but it does have a thing where it's like you can do a try before you buy it. You can take a photo of yourself and put the outfit on before you buy it. So that's a cool idea. Beam. Now I know you guys like Beam. What's Beam all about?
So this one's turning video calls into 3D. I mean, we all sit on video calls all day. The idea is to present the calls in 3D as if you're in the same room with someone you're on a call with. It's a bit like VR, but it doesn't require a headset. I predicted it will be in the graveyard in about 6 months.
All right. You guys have been in enterprise spaces long enough. You remember the Cisco telepresence rooms? So you would have in your different corporate offices, you would have these rooms built and they got the same equipment and the decor in the room is the same and the table is the same and it gave you a telepresence feel. So you're having a video conference with someone in a different office. But it kind of tricks your brain into feeling like you're at the same board table. This is a cheaper solution.
But it won't be cheap. It'll
be cheaper than that, building a whole room for it.
Oh, yeah, because those things were stupid expensive.
Stupidly expensive. People won't go for it. If you can get a $1,000 laptop, a $500 laptop and have a video call, done.
Yep.
That's it. We're done. Yeah. Right. And it's far more versatile.
I don't need to
see someone in 3D. I couldn't care less. whether you're 3D or 2D. Off the ground.
But what I can see getting off the ground is VO3.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. VO3, AI video generation tools that are already incredibly impressive.
Yep.
But now it's got dialogue.
Yep.
Got sound.
I saw a demo of this the other day, and it is phenomenal.
Yeah. The clip that I saw yesterday, that someone, it took him about 2 hours to put it together, and it's just, I mean, the dialogue's not great because he was just like, hey, look, we can talk. What are we going to talk about? I have no idea. But having, he had like 20 different scenes of characters going through this and using different accents. Fantastically well done.
And the other tool that's out there that only needs 10 seconds of your voice in order to perfectly clone your voice. So you couple that with this, and all of a sudden you've got the ability to...
You're making movies.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
No human required.
Moving on, number 5, Gemini Live. Now, I didn't quite grok this. What are we doing with Gemini Live? It's kind of like Lens, is it, combined in the search?
It's the AI-powered voice assistant that's on your phone, basically.
Oh, of course, right. You can talk to generative AI assistant using natural language. But it includes vision as well, I think.
Yeah.
You can share your phone screen and camera.
Yep.
As well. Nice. Number 6, Flow. Awesome new AI filmmaking tool.
Yep. It uses Google Labs video effects tool. So, yeah, another really cool one.
Another cool one. And number 7 on the list, Gemini's artistic abilities are now even more impressive. So the one good thing about this, Imogen has come up to 2K.
Yeah.
So you can generate a 2K image and then cut it down to a 1080 and gives you that.
And the images that it generates, they are so realistic. It's not funny.
Mm.
It really is quite phenomenal what it can do.
And number 8 on the list, Gemini 2.5 Pro. Has got a groundbreaking Deep Think upgrade.
Yep.
You and I, we've all been fans of the deep research mode. Mm-hmm. So very keen to see how Deep Think goes.
Yeah, it sits there and thinks about it further rather than trying to kick out an answer as quickly as possible. Nice. Number 9, Gemini AI Ultra.
Open your wallets, everyone.
Yeah. I don't think this one's taken off. Like, not at $250 US a month. Whoa. No way.
That would want to come with a whole lot of coding completions in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when are we getting a bigger context window? Because I never even got onto my vibe coding journey this week, but context window was my problem.
Mm.
But look, if you're a filmmaker developer and you want to use some of these, video generating functions, and you're doing a lot of generating for $250 a month, maybe, I don't know. Big studios might go for it. Google has just showed the future of smart glasses. Oh God, smart glasses. Didn't we leave those behind 15 years ago?
Yeah, probably. But they come back again. They're working with Samsung.
Yeah, no one's going to sit there with a big thing on their head. If it was a streamlined pair of glasses, maybe like Google Glass, maybe we'll see that come back. Project Astra. What's Project Astra? AI assistant. React and respond to the user's visual surroundings.
Yep.
Nice. And Chrome is getting some AI enhancements as well. This is number 12 on the list. Gemini is now rolling out in Chrome for desktop. Now, one of the things I did like about this is the ability to summarize web pages. Mm. Now, I created those little summaries in our show notes there, but what if it was just like a little feature built straight in there? Bang, summarize this page, and it pops up another window, and you get a little one paragraph summary of it. I mean, it doesn't help your attention span. But that would be really cool. Canvas. We like Canvas. The real kicker here is that Canvas can now take complex ideas and turn them into working code at speed.
Yep.
Without the user even needing to know his particular coding language. So if you don't know what Canvas is, if you're in Gemini and there's a little Canvas button at the bottom, you click that, and when you put your prompt in and you hit go, if it's building a code or building a document or whatever, it'll construct that in Canvas for you.
There you go.
And you can work interactively with the AI. There you go. Google AI. Oh, sorry, I.O.
AIO.
Well, look, guys, that has been fun this week. It always is, and we covered a bunch of stuff. And AI ain't going anywhere. That's basically what it should be. Maybe we need to renode the show. AI bites, I don't know. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to which one? Go to YouTube Music, go to Apple Podcasts and write us a review to really help the show out. And you can go to YouTube and start the discussion and smash that like button while you are there. Contact the show, contact at gcpbytes.com.au, and find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And of course, today's sponsors are Hivetech Solutions, thanks Dave, and Mantle Group, the most specialized Google partner in Australia, New Zealand. It was a great one to get.
Just in case that's you missed it the first three times.
Just in case you missed it the first three times, yeah. That's about it for me. Anything else to add?
No, I'm all good.
Have a great fortnight.
Keep out of the rain. Be careful out there, people. All right, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
How's the rain up there?
No rain up here, mate. No, this is a first, like the first week all year that we've had a week of blue sky. And I'm loving every second of it.
Mate, the Manning River is like swollen. The bridge is underwater now. It's crazy. Like, and it's coming south. It's like pissing down here at the moment as well.